coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Special crossover.
Do you like the Star Wars? Well, you've come to the right
place. Oh. He's just, he forgot where he was again. Somebody get Grandpa Cole on his meds again. He forgot. Eddie, I thought you were supposed to be here to wrangle Cole.
No, that's not my job.
To have kids down the street. That's the real problem.
Those kids in their Clone Wars and Rebels TV show.
They don't know.
When I was a kid, if you wanted Star Wars on the TV, you put a VHS tape in the recorder.
Bootleg copy of the Christmas special in, and you liked it. So this is a special crossover issue. This is going to be dropping, as you know now, on Revenge of the Fifth. We thought we'd talk of some Star Wars.
Absolutely. This was one of those things where I'd had floating around in the schedule, expanding a universe, and the original concept was considerably different than what it became, because I got to thinking as we, number one, realized, hey, one of our shows is going to be on Revenge of the Fifth the day after. Ideally, perhaps you're listening to this because you met Eddie and I at the Brick in Burleson at the Recreation Center for the May the 4th Be With You celebration over there. That was the first stop on our tour, but we'll get to that later.
We should say up top, very top, Eddie Medina is here. Funky.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie
like
Medina
seven.
Is here. Eddie and I yes. are like the testicles that hang on either side of the Jedi Cole universe, with
what?
Cole being the epididymis that connects us all and delivers our life-giving fluid.
Wow.
Him. Yeah, and I guess the internet is the taint.
Wow.
The internet is the receptacle for our love, sort of a Eutarian system that we built.
And for all of you kids we just met at the Burleson Festival, the Star Wars Festival. We apologize for that.
Listen,
for that comment.
This is the reason we didn't mention this show.
Children need to understand reproduction in the most clinical term. Which
well,
is what
actually,
that
though,
was.
I think also that most of the kids listening to the show now probably saw a Michael Bay Transformers movie.
That's true.
True.
Also, if most of the kids have the internet, if they found this show, they're on the internet. Therefore, they know way more than we do about sex. All right.
And this is this is tame by comparison. Also, if they since they live in Texas, they've undoubtedly seen that dangling little sack on the back of many a monster truck.
Oh, that's true. I want somebody listening, either a Hey Kids fan or a Rancor fan, somebody get my face and Andy face and Photoshop them onto some balls.
They don't have to be human balls. They don't have to be testicles. Just like a tether ball and a tennis ball.
Wow, that's a tremendous size difference.
Hey,
right.
Genetics. What are you going to do?
Yeah. What are you going to do?
What you get,
but we're not here. Yeah, we're not here to talk about naughty bits. We're here to talk about the Star Wars. And as this evolved, well, there's that too.
Listen,
Star balls.
Listen, for both of you, Eddie wasn't here last week. Cole was here last week. We talked about Omaha the Cat Dancer, and I was on my damned best behavior that entire show. So I've got a buildup of just blue humor inside of me, just raging to death.
So you've got like the blue humor blue balls.
I got blue humor balls. That's what
I've got. Oh my gosh, Omaha the Cat Dancer. Y'all did an episode on that? Did y'all do one on Cherry? What's it called?
Cherry Pop-Tart.
Yeah, Cherry Pop-Tart.
No, we didn't. For the longest time,
I thought Cherry Pop-Tart was an actual Archie comic.
Oh my
until,
God.
Until it could have been Jerry at Duncanville Books that set me straight when I asked about it.
Is that like a spinoff? Is Jughead in that? Well, there's something head in there, but it's not
Jughead. But yes, this is a special crossover event with the entire Rancor team. Well, the entire recorded Rancor team, Cole and Eddie, and the entire Hey Kids Comics recorded team. So let's be honest here. Eddie is kind of the ghost host for this show. Whenever we can call him at a moment's notice, he shows up. It's great.
That's so true. So very true.
But yeah, we're gonna talk about Marvel Star Wars.
We're gonna talk about the classic Marvel from 1977 to 86. A lot longer run than anyone, especially in Marvel, ever imagined this book was going to have. In the research that Andy did, one of the things that really struck me was Stan Lee was opposed to picking up the license.
Oh, I have known that fact for years, because that was yet one more strike against Stan Lee in my book.
Oh, here we go. An airing of grievances against Stan Lee every time Eddie's on this show.
that's all I'm going to say.
Who cares if he's only 100?
I apologize. I have a cold, so if you hear me coughing stuff, everybody out there, you have my apologies. I'll do my best to drop, but if I don't, it's Eddie. She's old.
That's funny, because I have a cough, too. That we just...
Hey, the yin and the yang. We are the testicles.
Right.
Turn your heads and cough.
That's right. So the crux of this whole thing, right, is the idea that there is a crime family called the Black Sun, and their leader, who is Prince Shizor. He's gonna go meet Jabba, right? But on Tatooine, like, Boba Fett still has this. This happens in between Empire. This is what ties Empire and Jedi together. That's what we're talking about tonight. This is called Shadows of the Empire. It stars Prince Shizor and a bunch of designers.
No, it doesn't.
There was a great toy line with a little speeder thing.
Not only was there a great toy line, there was a novelization. There was actually a novel.
It was great.
There was a comic book adaptation, and there was even a soundtrack. So
they rolled this up and shoved this up our ass when we couldn't get another Star Wars movie for 10 years. So I'm going to roll with it, and you're going to like it, Shizor.
All right. Well, that was, of course, from the Shizor verse, from the...
the Shizor...
This was that was an excerpt from the latest episode of Running with Shizors. And
I'm not done. I'm never going to be done.
I know. That's why we're going to move on, honey.
Listen, there's a guy on in that thing called Big Giz. Big Giz. Why aren't we talking more about
that's,
Giz?
That's why we're moving on.
There is no Shadows of the Empire when it comes to the comic books. There is none.
Yes,
the only thing. I know there is, but.
There's six issues.
Listen to me. The only thing that exists in the comic book world that ties Empire to Jedi is everything that came after the Empire issues of The Run to issue 80, which was the issue right before the Return of the Jedi miniseries came out.
Was there ever a better name? Can you give me a better name character than Dash Randor?
Dash Rendar? You mean Dash Rendar? Yeah.
Listen, I'm from Ohio. Dash Rendar. We pronounce
tomato, tomato.
I say Crick. Dash Rendar.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Rooster Cogburn.
No problem.
Okay. But yes, back in the late 70s, George Lucas was sort of the P.T. Barnum of cinema, because he went around not only trying to sell this movie to any studio that would give him money, but also to sell this to comics and toys and paint by number
works.
Yeah. It's a real shame that he died penniless. It's the Hollywood Hotel.
Can we talk about that alternate universe for a few minutes? Like the universe where Star Wars failed?
Oh, no, that would be, yeah.
I can talk about that for a year. What do you want to talk about?
Imagine that world where the big sci-fi hits ended up being Battle Beyond the Stars and not Star Wars.
It was actually the big criticism was that it was no 2001, and a lot of very cerebral wannabes came through. Battle Beyond the Stars was actually this weird sort of journey into the human mind.
I live in a world where it was Krull. Where Krull ended up being I would be
okay with that.
Three-part Krull plus the prequel that came out 12 years after that,
I live in a world where the Cyclops and Krull actually died like he was supposed to.
Because Krull was essentially just a Star Wars ripoff. When you get down to it, because there was Chewbacca, there was Han Solo slash Luke Skywalker, and instead of a lightsaber, he had that weird glaive boomerang thing.
The glaive.
Yeah, so I live in a
world. It was a glamorang.
It was a
glamorang.
Really?
That's what we call those.
That's what we call those.
You did say Glamorang, right?
I Glamorang, yeah.
Is that coined? Is that now a coined thing?
Oh, it's our universe.
Hashtag Glamorang.
Hashtag Glamorang. In our universe, it is now. Hashtag in our shared universe.
Glamorang is actually one of the Muggerville Seven as well.
Well,
it's sort of like you took David Bowie and Captain Boomerang and put them together.
I'm going to need to stop this podcast now and think about that for about 9 hours before I come back.
Okay, but what we are actually here to talk about is literally the genesis of Star Wars in comics that almost didn't happen.
Right.
And, this was a period where Marvel was on the ropes, where prevailing wisdom was that, the last time we bought a license was that damned Logan's Run, and look what that got us.
Well, no, to be fair, they had a successful Planet of the Apes run.
Oh, they did. They did indeed.
Yeah.
Well, that's because they had that kick-ass art that they would have the...
Right.
The little ad with the gorilla guy holding the other, the chimpanzee guy, and it's like looking all tough. And it was just a caption, Planet of the Apes. Like, I'm buying it. I don't know what it is.
I don't think there was a bad cover in that whole run of Planet of the Apes. I kid you not. I could, like, wallpaper a wall in my room, my house, with just the Planet of the Apes covers because they were so awesome.
You know what's true is that if you look at the covers from the Star Wars run, it's the same thing. They're
awesome.
They're amazing covers.
And to go one step further, the covers to the Battlestar Galactica series, all of them, they're like...
That's so true.
They just had, like, this magic thing going on between Planet of the Apes, Battlestar Galactica, and Star Wars.
Well, you know when you see, like, the Georgian movie covers or the Czechoslovakian,
the posters from overseas, posters. Yeah.
That's what these look like. Yeah. This is weird, awesome art. Like, and a lot of it, you've also got to remember that as we get into this talk about it, a lot of what Marvel did in early books was sort of, it wasn't unsanctioned. You find out at some point that they had to clear everything with Marvel, but a lot of it was without any kind of real life modeling or any, they just
kind of were throwing it
up against the wall to see what it would look like and imagine what it was, which
came
out super awesome.
Yeah, well, what's amazing is that Lucasfilm, did have the reins on the series, yet at the same time, there was a tremendous latitude to play with all kinds of stuff. And what's so funny is that, you can't say that they held a tight rein when you get characters like Jackson, the giant green rabbit, who I loved that character. And somebody once told me between Star Wars and Empire that he was supposed to be in Empire Strikes Back. I was a little pissed that didn't happen.
Well, they could not have done that. There's no way in hell. There's no way.
But they could get away with Yoda? It's the same thing, just in the opposite direction. You went down instead of up.
it was like the Hobbit version.
They have long ears.
That's specious, Eddie. That's you.
It's like, okay, let's take Jackson, remove the buck teeth and the rat and the fixation with not being a rodent. Get him out of the Buck Rogers costume.
Right.
Put him in Obi-Wan robes in miniature. Give him a hideous duck Sasquatch feet and have him talk in some sort of weird fashion. Give him a crinkly brow and old man hair and
brow.
That's right. There is one connection. Green.
That's it.
Green and ears.
Green and ears. That's what you're going with. All right. You could not have had a giant bunny rabbit. There was at no point. Okay, so Eddie, answer me this.
I'm still pissed that Return of the Jedi had Ewoks instead of freaking Hoojibs, because I wanted Hoojibs in there.
Oh, nobody wanted Hoojibs.
We will not condone that kind of racism on this show, Eddie.
Apologies to all of our people born. It's everyone born after 1951.
Oh, no. It's like a
clip. Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about those little silly rabbits.
They did appear, but the tricks are for kids. They did appear in the comic book, though. Hoojibs did.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I want them to make the jump from the comic books to the movies.
Well, the thing about it is pretty much nothing made the jump.
No.
The Marvel, what's interesting, though, about this is this was like, Planet of the Apes notwithstanding, this was the first really commercially successful license. And it sparked a kind of unusual period at Marvel, especially as we're going into the 80s, where they went license crazy.
That is true.
It's because of the success of this.
Yeah.
But what's really fascinating is there are two titles that I can cite where Marvel's contract with the license holder differed from every other license that they did. When they went after toys and other things like that, more often than not, there was this weird kind of, oh, we don't care what you do, it's your stuff, where they, you know, the license holder would sign over the rights, and it's like, you know, we own this, but whatever you heap on top of it, it's like, we own the chicken fried steak, but you get to keep all the gravy.
Right.
And you had things like in the Micronauts, mm-hmm. where characters they introduced, or in Rom the Space Knight, or in all these other titles, Godzilla, and, you know, all these characters that were created became eventually folded into the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, Red Ronin from Godzilla became part of the Marvel Universe, but Godzilla from Godzilla can't be.
Right.
And the interesting thing with Star Wars, and I think, thankfully, they weren't allowed to do that.
You,
and that's
you're
good.
You're telling me you don't want a world where in the... This would answer the question, though. This would help you out, would be in the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie if Jackson the Rabbit showed up. You would be...
Now, that would
out.
Be great for Eddie. The thing about it is, the reason that I'm happy that was not the case in this particular instance is Marvel would be incapable of resisting the urge to undermine the underpinnings of Star Wars, and I've waxed philosophical about this many times, and it's the very first thing you ever saw on the screen, no matter which Star Wars film was your first, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Right.
If they owned the rights to Jackson, by God, Jackson would have been in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. We would never have had Rocket.
That's true.
And because they would not have been able to resist getting some money off of this. Because it's not like it cost them anything extra in pencil lead or anything. But, you know, they want to be able to use these characters again because they can. And so in that regard, I think we're very fortunate.
I think
if we had put in Jackson in the movies, we would have had Jackson instead of Jar Jar. That's just me.
No, I was actually thinking the same thing. Jar Jar was their attempt to, Lucas was sort of channeling, what sort of things would I never allow in, oh, that Jackson character.
Yeah, exactly.
If I make him lop-eared and orange and and duck-faced, then Marvel has no clue what I've done here.
Well, I think what's really interesting about these, and I guess it didn't even dawn on, right? And like I was saying before the show, you know, my comic books were about superheroes. So I never even, and I love my Star Wars, but I love my Star Wars, you know, either in magazines that I bought or in movies that I would watch, and they didn't make it in my comics. That's the way I live. So a lot of
and Tijuana Vibes, and
especially Tijuana Vibes. I love those Chewy and IG-88 little drawings.
Oh,
that you did,
wow!
Was that you got your initial run of adaptation of the first movie, but eventually they had to go away from those characters because there was a fear that they were going to screw up the continuity. They couldn't do too much with them. So they started introducing, you know, they kept Han and Chewie around for a while, but then they introduced, what were the three they introduced? There was whatever the Greedo people were, I can't remember.
Rodians.
There was a Rodian. There was a guy named Dash Randor, and then there was
Here we go again. Okay, look.
I'm being serious here. The three the Gumball Rally version of Star Wars that they had to introduce to that would every once in a while intersect the main characters, but had their own thing with there was another crime like another sect of the Empire trying to overthrow Darth Vader, and they were going after them. Well, That for me is really interesting. They had to kind of create their own kind of side in the middle of it in order to continue to make these comics and make it viable.
Well, the thing is that you are right about that, because especially between Empire and Jedi, the clamps really went down hard on Marvel creatively because of a fear, to the point where the list of mandates, things they couldn't mention or do anything with, just hamstrung everything within the title.
Right. But what happened... go ahead. I'm sorry, Eddie.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish that thought. I'll jump in later.
What happened to the first, like, in between Star Wars and Empire? Like, what did they explore in that era? Because I really didn't read them.
Well, It was a lot of just like your run-of-the-mill sci-fi stuff, and a lot of it kind of played off more Buck Rogers-like than it did Star Wars. Like you had, I think that was during that era was like the introduction of Waterworld, I think. There was like a water planet.
Oh,
where,
yes.
And it was a lot of like, take this unused script of whatever sci-fi comic series got cut, you know, cut down short and pop in the Star Wars characters instead. Because you had, like, these, like I said, the aforementioned Waterworld, and you had, like, your typical red dragon serpent-looking creature rising up out of the water, which, honestly, is cool, because if that was in a Star Wars movie, it would be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and Chewbacca basically became more Sasquatch-like, more so than in my mind. But,
yeah, he really did become Space Bigfoot at that point.
Yeah, he really did. But a lot of it
which
was
is
just,
why a lot of people got confused during the NFL draft.
There was an attempt.
Nice.
This is
I love the fact that he just kept going. He let that right.
There was even pre-Empire, they even tried their hand at introducing bounty hunters into the Star Wars universe. You know, they had this one issue. I remember it was like a big deal where they had like this, basically before there was a Cable, there was...
Oh,
this
yes!
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
you remember
yeah.
him?
It
said on the cover really big, The Hunter. And I thought, not only was that exciting that we had like this Nick Fury Cable-looking guy before there was a Cable, but Jackson was also on the cover. So it was like, they were really
oh,
pushing...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because they had like all the faces of the different
like, characters. The floating heads.
Surrounding yeah. them. And they, that would have been like, Valance, the droid-hating bounty hunter.
Yeah, he was the Lobo of the Star Wars.
Yes, Valance.
It's like that skull's working for punishment.
But yeah, you can. I found I was looking at that very cover earlier, and I'm thinking that's Cable.
What's that?
Oh yeah, yeah. The little skull on his armor, like an Izod alligator.
Yeah, yeah. The Punisher brand Izod. Good.
Well, kind of designer armor there. That you know.
You gotta be the Star Wars.
But
everybody's
to take
got armor.
A quick step back, you were talking about you were actually giving Star Wars too much credit, Cole, in that it kind of opened the flood doors to all these other licenses. Like they went license crazy. In a way, that is true, but you're not giving credit where credit is due. The only even before that, I think the big selling point for Archie, what's his name? Yeah,
Archie Goodwin.
His big selling point that convinced Stan Lee to take a chance on Star Wars was that their previous license, Conan the Barbarian, was a big hit.
Oh, that's true.
Not Archie Goodwin, Roy Thomas.
Okay,
Roy Thomas's big success on Conan, he used that as leverage to get Marvel to greenlight Star Wars. So that was a big deal. And the fact that, I don't know if this was mentioned already, but because I was kind of zoning out because of my coughing, but one of the other selling points was that Marvel didn't have to pay a licensing fee to Lucasfilm until they sold X amount of copies of the comic book.
Oh, like, that's so, right. They did kind of have
like it was a gamble for them on that part.
Kind of a buyer's market.
But lo and behold, that first issue of Star Wars, they said, ended up selling over 1 million copies, which outsold their highest selling comic at the time that Star Wars came out was Amazing Spider-Man. And Amazing Spider-Man was pushing about 200,000 copies. So here comes Star Wars and outsells it 5 times over. So that in itself was like this a big deal. So then, of course, Stan Lee was like, oh, I guess we have to pay them their licensing fee now. But anyway, I'm not going to.
Wasn't this what they attributed to saving Marvel at the time?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Was this the era kind of we're getting into the era where, you know, they were in talks with Michael Jackson to buy Marvel? Like, it was bad news. It was bad news.
It really was.
And this is what saved was the million copy selling number one Star Wars along with, you know. But if you look, it's no surprise if you know, talk about creators a lot, but if you look at the creators that were associated with this book, the comic book star power that they threw at Star Wars comics is insane. Yeah. It's insane.
Oh yeah.
What
they did very shrewdly was, and perhaps it's because they felt like they were never going to have to pay the licensing fees initially, but they did consistently choose some good artists to put on the series that very often, you know, worked very well with the material at hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, they easily just could have given it over to some hack in the bullpen.
Yeah.
And just, you know, because they did that with a lot of things.
They did that with G.I. Joe. Like,
yeah,
nobody wanted to touch G.I. Joe except for Larry Hama. Thank goodness he touched it, because he touched it with magic fingers.
Oh, here we go.
Exactly.
Sad eyes and magic fingers, the Larry Holland story.
Sad eyes. That talk about racist.
No.
You're right, Alcon. Right.
You were at Alcon when the Bill Bixby music played while he was eating breakfast, staring off into the Midland distance.
Yeah, I missed that Alcon, unfortunately. I'm so kicking myself because I had free passes that weekend to go, and I still didn't go. I don't know why.
Yeah. But yeah, they brought in a lot of really good talent. And as far as, you know, where do you go after Star Wars, knowing that you can't, you know, nobody was trying to come up with their fan theories, you know, top fan theories on what's going to happen in the
YouTube video.
The Star Wars sequel, number 7 will amaze you.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was sort of like within the confines of, we got to get everybody back together by the end so they can go on and do whatever it is that Lucas has in mind.
Yeah.
One of the things that was kind of interesting, and I think it was to sort of pad the stories out a bit, was that they broke up the band.
Yes.
You have Luke, 3PO, R2, and Chewie going off. So Han can go have misadventures with Leia.
Huh.
With budding non-romance there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the characters back together. Some of them go on solo missions. And sometimes you get like, look, it's the Obi-Wan Kenobi flashback because he's dead. We can't talk about him.
Yeah, exactly.
But they did, one of the neat things, though, is I felt like, as a fan, they were advancing the mythology and the story of some of the characters, especially Han Solo, because, like, it seemed like nobody but Chewie was not trying to kill him. Like everybody was out to either kill him or, you know, he apparently owed everybody money, and we saw that in episode 7, certainly. But, you know, he kept running into the wrong people.
Yeah.
And having finagle his way around. And
he's the Star Wars Fletch.
Oh, that's so true.
Like, that's who he's always been, is Star Wars Fletch.
I never really thought
of that. Oh, my gosh.
Hey, how about Han Solo? This gritty kid in the streets of Corellia.
Really creeps excitement.
I think that was his alias when he went and visited the Wheel, the giant gambling. It was like this, was it like a casino space station operated like just outside Imperial jurisdiction? It's the Empire. It's like, you know, having a manufacturing plant in Venezuela. The government can come in and take it over any minute.
I just discovered the movie that I wanted. If they're going to make an anthology Han Solo movie, I want it to be the Han Solo legend. That's what I want to see.
Gosh.
Tell me that would be brilliant.
with the Grand Moff Tarkin CG as the corrupt chief Carlin.
Right. Damn it. Uncanny Valley Grand Moff Tarkin.
Wow. So that was, I think, one of the interesting things that Marvel did. Granted, a lot of the stories were, like Eddie said, they're plug-ins. It's like, you know, I forget, there was a writer for cartoons who once said that he reused the same plot 5 times.
It was Buzz Dixon.
Oh, Buzz Dixon, yeah.
Yeah.
They basically just like, oh, well, this now that same story is going to be a Thundercats or a Transformers.
Yeah.
I mean, if you watch Transformers, G.I. Joe, Thundercats, He-Man, there's at least 5 of those story arcs. One or two issue episodes story arcs that are exactly the same. No questions.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of counting on us not really paying enough attention.
They're counting on 12.
Yeah, well.
Adults, damn it.
Yeah, that's right.
They were playing on the internet, you know, being around later on.
Exactly. Yeah, we got every right to watch this stuff. So, yeah, granted, a lot of the stories were a little bit hackneyed, but they did some interesting things. And then, of course, you know, the big deal was when they did one issue, rather, that was titled The Empire Strikes.
Yes, and that came really early on.
Oh, yeah, that was like the 7th or 8th issue or something like that.
It was in the teens, I believe. But, yeah, it was so early on prior to Empire Strikes Back, because I remember having that comic. And later, when they announced The Empire Strikes Back, I was thinking, wait, are they adapting?
Exactly.
Issue number I was thinking they were going to adapt issue number 18 and 19 and 20 of Star Wars.
It's like, it wasn't that good a story.
That's the problem you run into with when you sell a license to a comic book like that, is that one thing that comic books have always done really well is be ballsy with other people's property. So you've got to be real careful.
Okay, and speaking of which, since you brought up The Empire Strikes, while y'all are, if I'm sure you're in front of your computers, Google Star Wars Marvel number 49 and tell me what the cover says. Because as soon as this was announced, I was like, what? Star Wars Marvel number 49, go.
All right.
We'll give you 10 seconds.
And then you too.
This is good. This is good. This is good podcasting right here. We're
gonna give
you 40 seconds.
For those of you listening at home, we're
Yes. This is the first thing I thought of when it was announced. Tell them what it says, number 49 on the cover.
Ah, this thing, I'm having internet trouble here.
Do you want me to just tell you, Cole? I'm sure you can guess.
Oh, okay. I think I know where we're headed with this.
Yeah. It says, Star Wars, The Last Jedi.
Yes! When that announced, I didn't even have to look it up. I thought, issue number 49. Got it.
Well, and the funny thing is, art on these is just amazing. Like that, like when we did our Doctor Strange issue. Like, it's that Walt Simonson trippy. Oh, so good.
So many of these covers are so much like a spaghetti western poster. It's crazy. Yeah,
you're exactly right.
Like Star Wars number 8, especially.
Yes. Can we?
Where you got like Chewie, like, you know, molar roming this.
Molar roming.
That's a good verb. Fred.
This poor hapless alien there. Well,
that's going to go down in vocabulary history right after fisting.
Molar roming.
It'll wind up in Urban Dictionary. Molar
roming. Right. Like, and it'll be dirty.
It's like fisting, but you pull something out.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that was a terrible visual.
That's the, what were they, what were they chanting? I lost the joke. What were they chanting in Temple of Doom?
I can't even.
Yeah, you just have the thuggy back there going, Molaram Suram, Molaram Suram.
That's right. And then Chewie just pulls out. Oh, that's Patrick.
Yeah.
That's what that
Oh,
meant.
My gosh.
You just want a Key and Peele thing there. You know, it's like, yeah, Chewie, Molaram, at your heart.
That's your heart, right there. That's your heart. That's your heart. No, can we talk? Okay, you opened the can of worms here.
All right.
On issue 8. We need to have this needs to be a major focal point of this conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I think you can't talk about the classic Marvel Star Wars era without talking about, was it Seven Against the World?
Seven Against the World or Seven...
Eight.
All right, yeah, that's right, because it's the not a Magnificent Seven ripoff.
Well, it started... The actual title was 8 for Abduba 3.
Oh, that's right.
But the cover says 8 Against the World, which is much more, like you said, much more Antonioni, much more, you know, spaghetti western, much more Kurosawa.
You know, it's funny because as a kid, I somehow missed number 7 at the 7-Eleven spinner rack. So I went from the adaptations to issue 8. And even as a kid, I thought they missed the mark. Instead of calling it 8 Against the World, I thought, why didn't they call it 8 Against the Galaxy?
Or 8 is enough against the Galaxy.
That's because Adam Rich wouldn't enter the Star Wars universe until the holiday special as Chewbacca's kid.
Oh, wow. with Willie Ames
Willie Ames as the Dark Lord of the Sith.
As Kylo Ren.
It's Kylo Ren.
Listen,
oh my god.
Leave Willie Ames out of this.
Listen,
just because now we exist in a universe where Scott Baio is Rey and Willie Ames is Kylo Ren is in charge of our days and our nights, and I say, I want Kylo in charge. No, that doesn't work. It's not same as Charlie in charge.
No, it's more like...
Oh my gosh.
Because episode 8 is enough.
That's right.
Love.
Yeah. You take the good, take the bad, you take them both, and there you have.
Yeah. The Jar Jar Binks.
No.
The Shizor. Okay, no, I don't want to get him going again. But yes,
Okay, so if we're going to talk about Shizor, we really need to talk talk about his pheromones and how they can we really get deep into his pheromones?
I don't think so. I don't want to molar on those.
who are we talking about? Caesar or Jackson?
Why you gotta keep
either one?
Jackson just had a lot of raw sexual potency.
Well, you know who doesn't
when
get
a rabbit? What's a brother to do when he's a rabbit?
You know, everybody always wants to throw all this attention on Jackson, but let's not forget one of the other eight was just as wacky, and that was a humanoid porcupine.
Oh, Hedgie.
Yes. It's like, how awesome was this character that he could fling his quills at his enemies?
But not only that, but he wore a cape.
Yes!
He had the greens.
No, you guys are missing the mark on the best one, which had the best name in Star Wars.
Oh, I know which one you're going to say.
Hold on. The D-Man of the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
What's his name, Eddie?
Don Obi-Wan Kyoto, or what was it?
Yeah, Don Quixote Obi-Wan. It's Don Juan, like Obi-Wan. It's Don Juan Quixote.
Yes, there you go. That's
who's
it.
Who's the Don crazy Quixote. Old guy who thinks he's a Jedi. Okay.
Yeah, and he has a lightsaber lance.
Yes. It's weird because they had the Ben Kenobi character, they had the Luke Skywalker character, they had the much sluttier Leia character, and they had the C-3PO on wheels character.
Wait, I have to stop you a second. The much sluttier, not a slutty Leia, a much sluttier.
Come on, she went around without a bra on. Come on.
That's just because of Lucas.
Lucas's fetish of women not wearing bras. But the fact that we got an R2-3PO combo character.
Yes.
I mean, you had 3PO's torso on basically R2's, on a rolling body, which is not unlike R2-D2. Why issue 8 is like one of the most awesome issues to ever come out of the Star Wars line.
Oh, yeah, because you got this.
Issues of comics, period. Let's just be honest here.
Oh, yeah, well, you've got, like you mentioned, the Luke Skywalker character, Jim, J-I-M-M, the Star Killer Kid.
Yes, Star Killer.
They went all in, is what happened.
Oh, they did. And what's it, and of course, yeah, was it like, is it Amazia or something like that? Amaza? Sluttier Leia?
I just call her Slutty Leia.
Or Space Whore. I mean, she, like,
space
literally.
Whore.
You just expected her to be like.
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Nice. Well, you know, you expected to have coverage of her, like, kind of leaning into land speeders and the.
Oh, yeah.
Eating
yeah.
a hamburger and washing a land speeder. Like,
Oh my gosh.
But the one of the things is I love to go back and revisit these.
She in her costume, let me just point out the fact that her costume, if you look closely, she had dewback toe. What?
Oh no.
I said it. Yeah.
Again, Wow. Best comic book ever.
Oh, yes. Well, and the thing about it is, if you go back and then, of course, you've got the long before the speeder bikes, you had the old sleigh type vacuum cleaner riding guys.
It
was the gang that basically the bad guys.
Cloud Riders, the Cloud Riders.
Yeah, the Cloud Riders.
Oh, yeah.
Rode around on vintage vacuum cleaners, the cancer type with the little sleigh, the blades from sled. And but going back and rereading this as an adult, I'm like, oh my god, how did? Of course, we didn't know this. We didn't have the knowledge or the sophistication to catch on that the leader of the Cloud Riders, who look uncannily like a young, thin Sergio Aragonés,
yes.
who at the time was drawing doodles in the margins of Mad Magazine, was Sergi X.
Ganatus?
Aragonatus.
You're kidding! I don't remember that. Oh my gosh!
And to further kind of add insult to injury, he was known in the comic as Sergi X. Aragonés, the arrogant one. Right.
Okay, I do remember that.
And then you go back and you look like, oh my god, it looks exactly like a very young Sergio. That can't be a coincidence. I wish I'd known when I got to meet him a couple of times in person.
Had him sign that issue.
I was dumb enough
to have him sign my Gru comics.
I was like, I didn't draw this, but you're in it.
Stupid me.
The coolest, oh my God. I think the coolest thing about this book, outside of the cast of characters, is that it is a, you know, yeah. they went all in with this idea. And I would have loved to have been in the bullpen while with Thomas Chaikin while they were kind of kicking this and whoever was, you know, whoever there. Because it is directly, yeah. It is, I loathe call it a ripoff. It is definitely a tongue-in-cheek homage to, you know, Seven Samurai and, you know, and the Magnificent Seven. That then yeah. goes back yeah. around Rogue One. I think this is I think this is the origin of one. I think
issue number 8 and 9 or the issue wow, I never thought of it that way.
That's so true. And this is for Bobby Blakey, Chiro Dimwe.
Like Jackson. He listens to this.
Yeah.
Is Jackson.
No, I thought it was going to be Don Juan Quixote.
No, that's the Bays Malbus is Don Juan Quixote.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Who's Forrest Whitaker?
Don't ruin my insult.
Who's Forrest Whitaker?
I just assumed Quixote was Bodhi because they both lost their mind.
I mean, oh, that's true. True. And also Don Juan Quixote.
Quixote. I'm telling you, there's a lot of argument to be made for this. That's all I'm saying.
Right. I think y'all have hit on something big here.
The other thing that's fascinating about this is for some reason Han Solo is conducting interviews for his
yes.
With no shirt.
Yes, I always thought that was so odd. Burt Reynolds style. Burt Reynolds style, just sitting there with no shirt on. It's like, at least you know, do what what's his name did for Batman in the Ra's al Ghul story, where he gave Batman that hairy chest. Give Han Solo a hairy chest,
right
at least.
Right off panel, Lando's over there in a pair of tidy whities on a Naga Hide Barca lounger, just watching and tell him to slow down. That's what
what you don't have coverage of
is slow down.
Oh, the other end of the room where the there's a big trash can full of giant wax strips covered like you know, a pile of dead tribbles or something over there.
Well, that's what Lando was doing. That's how I had to take his clothes off. Right. He was waxing Han Solo.
Oh my God.
It just got even more awkward. Yeah, because it's like the scene where he's...
When Lando lost the Millennium Falcon, it was two things he had to do. He had to give up the Millennium Falcon, and he had to wax Han Solo. Oh,
you think it's awkward for Lando? Imagine how Chewie feels. That used to be his job.
Oh, how sad.
Oh, how sad. All right, we need to keep going. We got like 10 minutes left. Yeah.
We
got a lot to
cover. Okay, we got 101 issues to cover.
I know. And all I can, we keep concentrating on the early stuff. Like, we've talked about it before on the Rancor Pit, of course, about Jabba the Hutt.
Yes. I want to talk about
that. Really? Because they didn't know what Jabba was going to look like back then. Of course, that's a whole another raft of fan theories right there.
Yeah.
But you had a Jabba the Hutt who looked like the walrus-looking characters in the cantina. Mm-hmm. To the point where I was fascinated going back after reading the adaptation and going to see Star Wars again in the theater. And just as Luke, Ben, and the droids are arriving at Docking Bay 94, they always have to say it that way. As they're heading in, crossing in the opposite direction across the screen is the very character upon which the comic book Jabba the Hutt was based. So it actually kind of worked. Even though that's not the costume that was used for the shots that got awkwardly overdubbed with a god-awful CG Jabba many decades later. But the fact that not only did they use this character, I guess, as a stand-in for Jabba, they brought him back in a standalone story where appropriately titled Whatever Happened to Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah.
And it was sort of the encounter of Jabba. You know, they kind of cross paths with Han, and then they're sort of forced to work together in that clever kind of plug-in story way that would later become an episode of Rainbow Bright.
Goodness.
But that's more to the point of what I was talking about earlier. Where...
Or Strawberry Shortcake when the Cobbler Gobbler arrived.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, damn it. Is that you have this universe to play with, right? But that universe is being kind of finally controlled by this greater entity in form LucasArts, but they're kind of telling you to do whatever you want, but they're also kind of telling you that we might change everything you did and pretend it never happened. So
yeah.
It's a really weird situation to find yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Well, especially Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish that thought, and I'll get
some. Well, I think especially with the natural restrictions, like you say, everything's going to change. We can't predict where they're going. They're sure as hell not going to tell us much in advance. And there was one little thing as you're coming up on Empire, a very subtle little weaving of the foreknowledge that the writers had to have, because they had to have information on Empire on a timely basis to bring in, fold the adaptation in. And there's a great little thing right before they just, boom, here's the Empire adaptation out of nowhere, was they actually give you the bounty hunter on Ord Mantell.
Yes, yes.
There's a great confrontation where this bounty hunter tries to get the drop on Han, gets shot, and unlike most people who get hit with a blaster, is able to live long enough to make some dying words. And there's this wonderful line I thought was brilliant. It was, I'm not the best. Or it's like, I'm the first, not the best.
Oh, yeah? This was in a comic preceding the adaptation?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Because I remember the only thing I remember preceding immediately before the Empire Strikes Back adaptation was the very weird tentacle porn Star Wars cover. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, look at issue 38's cover. It's just weird. It's that weird.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you see it? It's just like the tentacles are just wrapping around Leia, and her dress is hiked up to where you can see her thick brick house legs.
Now that was the Michael Golden cover.
Yes, and I love Michael Golden's artwork, but this is such an odd. This must have been really early on in his career to where I thought, that's Michael Golden?
It really was, because I didn't like his art initially. No. I absolutely hated the fact that they let him do this. Yeah, but you're right. It's like this weird,
you got the weird Jedi 3PO torture droid coming up behind Luke with the lightsaber dildo or whatever that is. It's just really weird.
Well, it's actually it's from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Oh, it's a cockknocker's.
George Lucas is going to sue somebody.
Can we talk about the fact that they could not draw Luke Skywalker to look like anybody else other than He-Man prior to the Empire Strikes Back adaptation?
Okay, and I'm glad you brought that up, too, because one of the things that was fascinating about the comics up to that point, with very rare exception, it's like somebody at Marvel forgot they're not doing cartoons.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a reason that cartoons don't do what they call running changes, because it's more expensive to have to animate the character in 50 different costume changes. That's why the Queen Amidala cartoon never got off the ground.
Oh, man.
But it was like, it doesn't cost you any more to draw these characters in costumes you design. And I don't know for certain, was that a mandate from Lucasfilm? Or was it just like, oh, if Luke's not wearing his little farm boy tunic, no one will know it's Luke.
Rarely. They would give him something else. Like, they gave him like that. It was almost like the Bespin jacket.
Yeah.
He had like that brown jacket every so often. But yeah, it was always the white tunic with the He-Man chest busting out. And literally, like, you could, especially, and what's weird, if you look very closely between issues 1 and 2, like you were saying, Cole, they have just early scripts. That's why in the adaptation, you get Cammy and Fixer, because that was, they got the early script and they had just been supposed to go off of, so they didn't really know what a lot of these things looked like. Like, if you look at the way Luke is drawn, he literally looks like Prince Adam in the first issue.
Yeah, he has boy haircut, everything.
Yes! You can literally set them side by side, like separated at birth type thing. And you go to issue 2, and then all of a sudden it actually starts to look more like Mark Hamill, or at the very least, like a younger boy, man.
Yeah, makes him look like the,
But it's so odd. Even Ben Kenobi, it's like, it actually starts to look a little bit more like Alec Guinness by issues 2 and 3 and 4, as opposed to issue 1, where it's just like, they got a stock photo of an old dude, and they drew it that way.
So,
yeah, that is so very true.
I've got a question. Is anybody familiar with, and I gotta find this now, I don't know if I'll ever be able to, but is anybody familiar with the Empire Strike Back Monthly 154?
Oh, the UK one?
The one with Tillithany throws a shape in it. Does that ring a bell? There's a story called Tillithany throws a shape in Empire Strikes Back issue 150, monthly issue 154 by Marvel UK. This is written by Alan Friggin. It's a Star Wars short story written by Alan Moore.
Wait, which issue?
Empire Strikes Back Monthly 154.
154, okay.
It looks insane. Alan Moore, insane. How did I not know this existed until right now? There's ghosts. spirits. Somebody gets turned into a diamond. I don't know what's happening here, but I'm going to find out. Yeah, yeah.
That's insane. I have no idea this is a thing.
I
know about the Marvel UK run, and I've tried to track down a few issues here and there, but I didn't know Alan Moore actually penned a story.
So now we've got to go and, like, buy our copies before this hits.
Right, right. Yeah, I've got to find them on...
Because once this hits, everyone's going to go looking for it.
Where Eddie found his wrestling comic books. I got to go buy this thing before everybody figures out what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like, okay, so we're running really low on time. Does anybody have any final thoughts about this? I know we were all over the map, but I think it kind of got our point across that these comic books are friggin' rad. Like, that's what it comes down to.
Well, it's also important that before they lost their initial license... and it went over to Dark Horse for many years. Marvel did publish collected editions, I think, as omnibus or something like that. I forget what they called it. It was published as a long time ago in several volumes.
Yeah, that was a Dark Horse. They did 7 volumes.
Oh, that's right. Dark Horse published that. They just basically got published Marvel stuff for them.
Yeah, and they blacked out the Marvel banner across the front.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, there's no indication of Marvel anywhere in those things.
Yeah, but if you want to check out the Marvel run, and I bought up to the point where I stopped caring. I bought all 107 issues and all 3 annuals.
And
almost
the,
as they
and
came
the Jedi
out.
Miniseries. Don't forget the
Jedi. Yeah, and the Jedi miniseries.
Androids and Ewoks.
I didn't buy those.
I did. I love those things.
I had a bunch of.
But I literally subscribed to Star Wars so I wouldn't miss an issue. Uh-huh. And I think at the end I forget what title I went ahead and picked up because I was like, you have 9 issues left in your subscription and we're canceling your book. You can choose from one of these titles you don't care about. But I forgot what my consolation was. But,
US 1.
I wish. That would be awesome.
I think I went with one of the New Universe titles.
Oh.
No. Yeah, I went with Spitfire.
Merc, baby, Merc.
Yeah,
Mark Hazard, Merc.
I went with Spitfire and the Troubleshooters.
Starbrand is back in a big way in the Marvel Universe. You better watch
out. Oh, man. DP7.
DP7, bitches!
Have we done an entire new universe episode yet?
We need to do a new universe.
I want in on that.
You're in. Yeah. You are absolutely in.
You are our go-to person for Kickers Incorporated.
Which, why that hasn't found its way into Super Sports Balls yet, I'll never know.
We got to work that in.
Oh, duh,
but,
yeah.
But in closing, I want to say that I was buying this book out of loyalty toward that.
Yeah.
I stopped even reading it because it was just getting into weird little, like, L. Frank Baum illustrated Oz giant bugs with Russian... Navy undershirts and stylish berets. I'm sorry, with apologies to our guest, Hoojibs. and then that one, what was the Lashbys? The Lashbys were the little cutesy, like even more saccharine than the Ewoks, and then they would suddenly hulk out.
Yes, yes, I know that.
And the Lashbys also, the other annoying thing was the Lashby language was depicted as exactly the same dialect as Woodstock from Peanuts. I'm not sure it was just like a one-sided binary or what, but...
Oh my gosh.
Think about it. But I did follow this thing all the way through, and one of the most amazing things was I never knew there was an annual. When the first annual came out, like you were saying, Eddie, about you missed it on 7-Eleven spinner rack.
Yeah.
Back then, I mean, one of the earliest comic conventions I went to, a guy had a few pieces of original art, and I saw Luke and Leia and some Batwing bald-headed, it was just black and white because it was the original art. I thought, okay, here's late 80s Storm with bat wings.
Uh-huh.
That sink in with the mohawk. And Luke and Leia,
Vampire Storm.
So I'm like, I asked the guy, he's like, what is that? He goes, oh, it's Star Wars Annual number 1. The hell you say?
It was the original art?
One of the pages of original art.
Oh, wow. Nice.
I'll have to see if I can find an image of maybe the page itself.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, like, Luke and Leia were painfully obvious because they hadn't changed clothes yet. And they got done with the Death Star. Apart from that brief, as soon as they got done with that Rebel ceremony where Chewie didn't get a medal, they were back of their old skivvies.
You know, it's
That's it. They got two outfits.
Yeah.
Right. It's funny that you say that because they, for one issue early on in the run, they diverted for Princess Leia, where she was still all in white, but she was wearing like white skin tight pants with the top that she normally has.
Oh, that's right. She was basically wearing the late 70s Wonder Woman costume.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember she was like on the run. She was like on the run from a bunch of stormtroopers and all that, running up a hallway.
Yeah. And then there was one issue where she wore like this like yellow rubber jumpsuit that everyone on the planet had been issued by the Empire.
Yeah,
that's right, Diana Ross planet. Yeah, I love to love you, baby planets.
Yeah, it was actually that they were mining solid gold for the Empire.
Nice. Wow, man, that's jokes to you for that.
Thank you. That was good. I'll give you that. That was a good one.
But I wanted to say that, you know, even when I stopped reading, I couldn't stop buying this stupid thing because it was Star Wars, especially toward the end when there was no other Star Wars in sight.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Eddie. What was it?
I was the opposite. I kept buying and kept reading. Like, I was digging the series more post Empire Strikes Back adaptation, because it seems like once they got past that Empire, and especially once they got past the Jedi adaptation, like in that era, they started knocking out some great stories. And so I got more into it in the later run than I did the early run, because the early one, it was just kind of like, it was just fun sci-fi adventures. But they started getting like some deeper issues going with some of the other runs. Pardon me. And so of course, I wasn't like Andy. You said you were all superheroes when it came to your comic books, and Star Wars just existed on the screen. I was the opposite. I didn't get into superhero comics until I was in high school, junior high, high school. Early on, all my comic world consisted of was literally Star Wars, G.I. Joe, Indiana Jones, and a wonderful 3-issue 18 miniseries. It was crazy because my comic book world consisted of things I knew from TV, cartoons, and movies, like the Buckaroo Banzai series and Blade Runner and all these. Like, my stuff was those comics. So I was all into Star Wars from the get-go all the way to the end.
Nice.
Like, I was eating up the stories. Like, when they went to there was a run where they went to this water planet later on. And I thought it was so cool because the aliens were dressed like when they came above water, they had to have like basically a globe.
Yeah, they had to have the Atlantean invader helmets.
Right. And they had the big bug eyes, which you would think the creatures that lived down in the depths would have. Like, it was awesome.
Yeah,
like,
that was the one with the Jedi wannabe kid that some sort of weird coral stalactite for a lightsaber.
Yeah. But it was just like, to me at that age, maybe had I been like 5 or 6 years older, it would have been different. But at that age.
Oh, so that's my problem.
Right. You know, I didn't want to say it outright, but you know. But maybe if I had been a little older, it may have been a little bit more like off-putting to me, but at that age, at that 10 to 15 year old age, it was gold.
I think yet another irony has been revealed is that Eddie and I were coming into superhero comics about the same time,
right? And
all I ever got was Star Wars and the occasional odd other books.
I saw
Stegron on the cover of Spider-Man. I'm buying that.
Well, I mean, of course I ate up anything that the Dallas Times Herald put in for free, you know. All those giveaway comics. But I would always buy the occasional Marvel Team Up or DC Comics Presents, because it was always Superman and the Blackhawks, or Superman and, you know, Doom Patrol, or was Spider-Man and Howard the Duck, and Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four. Yeah, so those were cool because that was my introduction to like the larger Marvel universe, because the first time I ever heard about Nick Fury was through Marvel Team Up. But anyway, that's aside from the point. Anyway.
But I mean, that's point was like talking about the wannabe Jedi with the lagmite, the coral reef lightsaber, or talking that's the cool thing about having all of the guys is they can conceptualize so much in this universe that was created. You know, you give you're giving them free reign to imagine these amazing writers and amazing artists to create, to conceptualize and create based on those ideas, and then you throw them on a world that doesn't exist anymore, and you get these insane things happening. You get Alan Moore writing about these three time-displaced stormtrooper ghosts that, you know, don't know time or space, and ghost sends them into the past into the future, and you're just like, this is Alan Moore writing Star Wars, and I want all of it. Why can't you just do that, Alan Moore? Yeah.
Give us what we crave.
That's right. So, speaking of time-displaced Jedi and stormtroopers, you guys are going to need to create more time here in the near future, what I understand, because you've got a full damn docket coming up.
I had the bright idea of, hey, Cole, let's do this summer road tour thing. And then now we're like,
okay.
And then, like, we schedule all these convention appearances and store appearances, and now, like, oh, crap, now we have to, like, actually go to these things.
It's not fun anymore.
We actually have to deliver, and...
I know. I didn't think anybody was going to take us up on our idea.
Especially, it's been amazing because we have, four conventions and one event, two store appearances.
Four conventions,
And everybody's just like, yeah, come on. I mean, granted, some of these things, like, you know, ideally, maybe yesterday you saw us at the May the Force Be With You Day. That's our second year to come out and goof off.
Yeah, my third.
Yeah, that's right. Your third year for that.
Everybody likes you. You don't have to rub it in. Jeez.
Exactly.
God,
come on.
Such a cheezor.
Or I'm a Sally Field or something. I don't know.
Oh my God. Give my daughter the medicine.
You can make it kind of like a Smurf thing. You cheezor me. You really cheezor me.
That's cheezor. Up there with your, okay. What was it you came up with earlier in this show, Cole?
Hell.
Oh, Bula Ramin.
Cheezor.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Wasn't that a Tom Petty song? She's oring.
It was. He's a Tom lizard man. Runs. I'll write a whole song.
Dripping with pheromones. Anyway, but yes, the Rancor Pit Roadshow Summer Invasion Tour has already officially begun as this goes live on the Jedi Cult Universe, and followed in 2 weeks by, I personally, I don't know, Eddie, you're probably the same way. I'm just aghast. I'm amazed the reception we're getting from Famous Monsters Convention in Dallas. The folks at Famous Monsters have just been insanely gracious and generous with us, you know, but for the fact that apparently there's just so many people involved now and so many guests and so many panels and so much stuff, which is great. We had to whittle back to three panels just for time and space constraints. But, you know, in a few weeks, we're going to be producing the fifth Galactic Games at, you know, the second one at a major convention, third one, I forget, I've lost track. We're going to be doing a roadshow.
Well, the third one was in Finicon.
That's right, yes. So.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Five. There you go. So, yeah, this will be our third one at a convention. We've done Infinicon, Alcon, and now Famous Monsters. And, hey, the sixth one will be at Infinicon again. But this year, it's our second year at Infinicon, our, third or fourth year at the GFW G.I. Joe and Toy Show.
Second official year as Rancor, we've been there. You were there with me, Cole. You've been there on your own prior to even me going there. And then you and I set up 1 year, and then me and Andy crashed the show the next year.
That's the day I met Eddie Medina. My life changed for that day.
That was not the day you met me, but yeah.
Yes, it was. Sure it was. It was the day I met you since I moved there. Let's put it that way. That's the first time that Eddie and I hung out by ourselves.
That's true.
Like that's when we were, you know, it was like that. They were playing that weird 60s Italian pop music.
Right.
We were skipping around and eating ice cream cones. And
it was like
buying ice cream soldiers.
That's right.
That played into the day too. Actually, we found that. We found the ice cream soldier. It was that weird moment where you're always friends with this person, but your other friend was always there too. In your case, Cole. So it was that first time that Cole wasn't there. So it was just me and Andy. So it was like that moment of, okay, I guess we're hanging out now.
Okay, you had to tear that wound back open. Thank you.
And I'll never forget the look on two grown men's faces when we found Ice Cream Soldier.
gosh. Yeah.
Eddie and I devolved at that show. But it was that weird sitcom moment where, you know, you're right, where you usually are in a group and then all of a sudden the two of you are stuck in the, and you spend the first half talking about that friend, and then it just slowly devolves into like just nerd, just running around like idiots, like just losing our minds about all this crazy stuff. Like, Eddie, I know we're off topic, but who was the G.I. Joe writer that talked to about
Dixon.
Stranko almost throwing a guy out of a window or a paycheck? Like, it was
a weird day.
It was awesome, but it was a weird day. No, because not to get too like weirdly like weird emotional, but I had just gotten there, and outside of Cole, I didn't have any friends yet in Texas. Like, anybody I could call and just like, I need to hang out. I went there by myself, not knowing anybody, and then Eddie posted on Facebook, I'm at the G.I. Joe convention, and I'm like, I'm here too!
That was also a surreal day, because that was the very first time I got recognized at an event from Rancor.
Yes!
That was for that day. That, like, someone actually came up to me and recognized me from the live show, and I thought that was... The first time it had happened was that day, and it was really weird to have that experience.
Yeah, that's a surreal thing where I, you know, like years ago talking to, when Catherine and I went to Star Wars Celebration, and I was at this event, and I got talking to a guy, and I was like, yeah, I gotta do this podcast called Hey Kids Comics. Oh, well, yeah, I listen to you guys. Like, well, good job recognizing my voice, guy.
That guy in Spitfire.
Right.
But, you know, you guys don't have an issue. With,
oh, might have been.
You guys don't have an issue with people recognizing now. Your mug's all over the place. When's your next live show? I know you're doing all these live appearances. When's your next live show?
Our, actually, what's weird, it took me like this day here, because we had yesterday, as you're listening to this, if you're catching it brand new, on Friday, yesterday, we would have the Force, May the Force be with you. And then Sunday, now, we have the next live show.
Yeah.
And a representative of Famous Monsters will be phoning in. And we'll also have the folks from the G.I. Joe show.
Yeah. Greg Brown from the G.I. Joe show, who was on the infamous pork chop sandwiches episode that offended everybody.
That's right.
It took some convincing to have Greg come back. He hasn't been back since our first studio at the first location.
Yeah, I had to promise no YouTube videos of any kind.
You're right.
And I won't use the hashtag Moist Side of the Force.
Oh, God. All right, so what else do you guys have going on? You guys are going to be at Famous Monsters.
Okay, we'll
do the list here.
We got Burleson out of the way. So May 26th to the 28th, Famous Monsters Convention in Dallas. June 10th, DFW G.I. Joe and Action Figure Show at Grapevine Convention Center. June 24th, Geek Out in Burleson. That's a store. We're going to be at there at noon. July 8th, Galaxy Call Dallas, another store at noon.
Who, again, I'm not sure, surprise, invited us back.
Right, exactly. July 15th, ArlingCon in Arlington.
Yeah, so, our second year there.
Fun,
oh, yes.
Oh, there we go. That's nice. A nice addition. And then, of course, to top off the Summer Road Show, August 11th through 13th, Infinicon 2017.
There you go.
So
seven stops over 3 months.
That's awesome. So. All right. Well, we need to get out of here. Next week, I will not be on the show. I'm going to be out of town, but Cole's going to hold down for it. Hopefully, have a very special guest, have a very special show. We're working some angles there. You guys got a bunch of shows. When's the next live drop? Or recorded recording, voice recording?
That's a good. Probably whatever we record at Famous Monsters. Yes, whatever we record at Famous Monsters will probably drop the next week after that.
There you go.
I don't know. That's
we are also working on a four-part, four-episode run in celebration of 40 years of Star Wars.
That's true.
We're going to go decade by decade, so be sure and check that out as well. So we're
it's coming soon.
Eddie,
we should
thank
say
you.
That.
Thank you for coming on the show. I'm sorry I called you the entire time.
I actually love that.
That's
to be honest,
that's such a Shizor thing to say. Yeah, Shizor would say something like that.
Right.
Not being called Shizor.
He's always Shizoring. He's such a she knows her.
All right. Well, buy, collect, enjoy your comics, especially old Star Wars comics, because I'm finding out they're way more cool than I thought they were.
There is actually Star Wars Beyond Shadows of the Empire.
So, and also, if anybody can find me that Alan Moore story or that issue that Gold drew of the Tentacle Poor and Prince Leia, Thunder Thighs, I'd love to have that too. Sorry if Thunder Thighs is offensive, but she's magic sucking. at least it's no pork chop sandwiches. All right, everybody. Eddie, did you have
I'll never live that down.
Do you have a last thought for us?
I don't know. I'm stuck on Leia's thunder thighs, so I'm just...
so am I, always.
Hashtag Leia's thunder thighs.
You know, right? There it is!
Hashtag Leia's thunder thighs. We will get killed. We will literally get killed if we hashtag Leia's thunder thighs. The only thing that this show was missing was...
Leia licked the wall.
The only thing that this show was missing was Mon Mothma and possibly Michael Keaton Black Turtleneck. But we'll get to that next time. Thank you again, Eddie.
The Jackson 5 are not Kirby dots.
God, no. I had blocked that. I had scrubbed from my
memory.
The
thing is, he's talking about the five Jacksons, the five Green Rabbits.
I'm going to draw that. I'm totally drawing that.
Oh, you should. Absolutely should. I want a print of that. All right, everybody. Yes.
Debut at Infinicon.
Say goodnight, you horrible, horrible people.
Good night. May the Force be with you.
Good night.
Bye, collect, and enjoy your Force. All right. Good night, everybody.
What's up?